Hi, my name is Kirk Kinder, and this is Saving Yourself from Wall Street, the podcast for people who want to avoid Wall Street's sales tactics, high cost, and conflicted advice so they can take control of their financial life. So let's get to it. In this week's episode, we're going to continue our discussion of the new Trump tax code. And the last podcast, I talked a little bit about what we saw that happened during the tax season as tax preparers. And we also then dug into the changes that happened with the Trump tax law. Again, things were very different for people this year. People saw different returns than what they've previously had, different refund amounts or different amounts that they owed. And it shocked a lot of people. I find that there's still a lot of confusion out there as far as what is in the tax code, how has it really changed. So the last episode, we took a look at income and the adjustments to income, the big things that changed on that area. Today, we're going to look a little bit at credits and deductions. And then we're going to finish up with some general ideas that you could do to sort of optimize your tax situation. How do you develop a strategy to improve your tax situation? So let's dig in. Let's get into it. So probably the biggest one that you're going to find biggest change is going to be the standard deduction. But before I get into that, I think I just want to talk a little bit about some of the other taxes and credits that are going to show up, because the itemized deduction and standard deduction is a really big item that we'll spend a little bit of time with on this podcast. So the first thing you're going to see is a big difference on a child tax credit. So for credits, this is probably the biggest change. In years past, what you basically got was the child tax credit was $1,000 per child if your child was under the age of 17, so essentially a 16-year-old or younger. You'd get the $1,000 right off the top. Remember, this is a credit, not a deduction. A credit is a dollar-for-dollar reduction in the taxes you owe, whereas a deduction simply reduces your taxable income. Okay, so the credits are great. So in the past, what you had was, again, a $1,000 child tax credit. And the thing is, you phased out of this credit pretty quickly. Once you got past $100,000 for a married filing joint couple, you started to lose your credit. And once you got over $125,000 of taxable income, the credit was completely gone. Well, what the new child tax credit did is it's now $2,000 per child. So it doubled. Not only that, but the phase out also more than doubled. Okay, so you've got a $2,000 instead of $1,000 credit, but the phase out doesn't kick in until you hit $400,000 of income for a married filing joint couple. So there are a lot more people that are going to be taking credit for the full child tax credit. And I mentioned in the previous podcast that people who had a lot of younger children and had higher incomes benefited greatly from this change. Now, people who didn't have children, we talked about that as well, but folks who had children and were under the $400,000, they were loving life. Now, another big, huge benefit for people is the adjustment to what's called the Alternative Minimum Tax, or AMT. So the AMT was established back in 1986 by President Reagan. Back then, if you remember, if you were around, they did a massive tax reform, and they tried to structure the tax code so that very wealthy people couldn't undertake a lot of strategies to avoid taxes. Without getting into the too nuanced, there used to be all kinds of write-offs for people. You'll hear people today, politicians today, talk about how we used to have a 90% tax rate for the highest paying taxpayers, all this stuff. But what they don't realize is nobody was paying that. There were so many loopholes that nobody was even paying that high tax rate. So what the 1986 tax reform did is it tried to normalize the tax code, and it lowered rates. It said, we're going to lower rates. We're going to get rid of these 90% rates, but we're going to reduce the amount of loopholes that existed. So basically since 86, what they did was they created a system, and this still runs today. Most people don't realize when you do your tax return, you actually do two tax returns every year. You run a normal 1040, but you also do a separate calculation under the alternative minimum tax. So you've got two tax returns being run every year, and you're going to end up paying whichever tax return causes the most damage to you, whichever one has you paying the most tax. So the AMT would only affect wealthier people, or that's what the intention was back in 1986. Now, back in 86, when they set this, most people weren't going to be affected in any way by AMT. What happened was they never adjusted the AMT tax rates for inflation. So as inflation naturally increased wages, more and more people ended up becoming subject to the AMT tax. So even people who maybe were making $150,000 were seen as very wealthy people under the way the AMT code used to be pre-2018. Now, $150,000 back in the 80s was a very nice income. You could probably be considered wealthy if you made $150,000 in 1986. But in 2018, $150,000, while it's certainly a good income, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're wealthy, especially if you live in a high tax state like California and New York. So the AMT was never adjusted at all, so that more and more people end up paying higher taxes because they were getting pushed into the AMT. So in 2017, you might have made $150K, $200,000 between you and a spouse, and you found out when you ran your regular 1040, you had one tax bill, but you ran the AMT tax return, and that was higher. So the AMT has now been adjusted, so you don't have to worry about it, the impact on you personally, until you get to the $400,000 mark. So that's going to help enormously. So rather than getting pushed into the AMT at $150,000 of income, you're now not going to have to worry about it until you really get up to about $400,000. And then the other beautiful thing is the government also adjusted that $400,000 level by inflation. So as we progress over the years or decades, you're not going to find the same situation you had from the 86 tax bill where people just end up affected by the AMT due to inflation. So both of those things are really going to help people that had that situation where they were making, $150,000, $200,000 and getting stuck with the AMT tax when really it should have never happened because Congress just didn't set it up so that the AMT was adjusting for inflation way back in 1986. Okay, so those are a couple things I just wanted to talk about real quick. There's other credits that were changed with the new tax code, but it really isn't worth getting into. The big thing that really impacted folks this year was itemized deductions and exemptions. So that's the next thing we're going to talk about. Now, this is going to be a really big, this is a big, big, big change to the tax code. What they're trying to do here is streamline and simplify the tax code. At least that's what they're saying they wanted to do. So what happened was the tax bill got rid of exemptions. What's an exemption? Well, for every person in your household that you're financially supporting, you used to be able to take an exemption for them, and that essentially would deduct about $3,100 from your taxable income. So if you had four people in your household, you had essentially about $12,400 that you could deduct straight off the top of your income. If you had 10 kids, obviously you did much better. Well, the new system gets rid of that completely. It's gone. There's no more exemption for people. So this is going to negatively impact large families or people who have a lot of kids, or maybe people who are taking care of their parents. Your parents are elderly and they've been deducting their parents as dependents for years. That's going to have an impact on you. So what they essentially did is they've rolled the exemptions into the standard deduction. Now the standard deduction is an amount that you can deduct from your taxable income based on your filing status. Okay, so if you're single, that's your filing status. Married filing joint is a filing status. Head of household is where you're single, but you have children or other people that are financially dependent upon you. Basically you have married filing separate. That's for people who are married, but they think they might do better if they can just get taxed on their own income individually. And then there's a qualifying widower filing status. This status is if your spouse passed away within the last 2 years and you're taking care of children, the IRS lets you get a higher standard deduction equivalent to what the married filing joint for a couple is, and you get to do that for 2 years if you don't have a living spouse. So again, let's get back. So what's happening is the standard deduction for all intents and purposes is doubling. So they're taking the exemptions and rolling that into the standard deduction and doubling the standard deduction. This is going to make it more difficult for people to do itemized deductions. Itemized deductions was an alternative to the standard deduction, and it really worked well for people so they could deduct medical expenses, real estate taxes paid, state income taxes paid, mortgage interest, including home equity lines of credit, and charitable deductions. So what you always do, in case you don't understand the tax code, is when you do your taxes, you either took the standard deduction, which is based on your filing status, it's a fixed amount, or your tax preparer got you to itemize your deductions. Well, now with the standard deduction doubling, a lot more people are just going to take the standard deduction and not itemize. The thought behind this is to simplify the tax code, and it does make it a little bit easier for more people just to take the standard deduction, especially if you've already paid off your mortgage. Chances are you're going to be taking the standard deduction because the mortgage interest deduction was probably the biggest itemized deduction that most people took. The second thing that they did on the itemized deductions, which has an enormous impact on whether people are going to itemize or take the standard deduction, is state income taxes paid. It used to be you could take all of your income taxes that you paid to the state as a deduction. Or should I say, you could also take your real estate taxes paid plus state income taxes. So in years past, you took everything that you paid for state income taxes plus, you know, real estate taxes. You could deduct it all. What the new law is doing is it's capping the state income taxes paid plus real estate taxes to a maximum of $10,000 per year. If you're in a high tax state like California, New Jersey, New York, or Maryland, where you have high state income taxes and high real estate taxes, well, you're gonna get hit here because a lot of people might have $30,000, $40,000, maybe even $50,000 of itemized deductions in years past based just on state income taxes and real estate taxes. That's capped at $10,000. So that's going to be a big, big adjustment for a lot of people. This is where I saw a lot of changes for folks. This really hit a lot of people. You know, I live in Maryland. A lot of Maryland folks were impacted by that. Now, the medical expenses is actually going to remain the same. Medical has always been a difficult itemized deduction to take, because you can only deduct the amount of out-of-pocket medical expenses that was 7.5% above your adjusted gross income. Remember, I said in the last podcast that the adjusted gross income figure was a big part of your tax return. Well, here's one area that it does come into play. So you can only deduct the amount above 7.5% of your AGI. So not a lot of people really ever get to take medical expenses as an itemized deduction. But this has remained exactly the same in the new tax code. So this is kind of a positive, but you're essentially looking at to have a tougher time of itemizing if you don't have a mortgage or if you're in a high income tax state. The other part of your itemized deductions that have changed drastically is miscellaneous deductions or job expenses. If you had out-of-pocket expenses for your job, things such as mileage, gifts, union dues, uniforms, travel, or education and training costs, those things are no longer deductible under the new law. Tax preparation fees used to be deductible. They are no longer deductible. I'm a financial planner. I had a lot of clients who could deduct the cost of the fees that they paid me. That's no longer deductible. So any kind of miscellaneous deduction or job-related expenses that you paid for out of pocket are no longer deductible. If you're a member of a union or if you do have a lot of out-of-pocket expenses for your work, you need to go back to your employer and try to find a way to get them to reimburse you for those items. If you could somehow negotiate that they pay you for those items or that you'll offer it up front, that's the only way you're going to get a benefit. Otherwise, you're just losing a tax deduction. They've also impacted the gifts to charity. Now, this is not a big change here, but you can deduct up to 60% of your adjusted gross income in any given year for gifts to charity. That figure used to be 50%. Now it's up to 60%. So if you're giving 60% of your adjusted gross income to charity, God bless you, because I don't know many people that have enough income to where they can give away that much. But maybe you have a one-time sizable payment, some sort of bonus. You really need to find some tax savings. You've got an opportunity to put more in charity and deduct it. So that's one little change, and it is kind of nice. It's one change they made that it's not going to affect a lot of people, but you never know. Now, one change that they did make to charity that could affect a lot of people is you can no longer deduct any kind of charitable gift if you get sports tickets in exchange for that gift. Oftentimes, people will give to charity, and then they get season tickets to the college football games. Well, guess what? If you do that, you can no longer take the charitable deduction. So what you have to do now is actually pony up and buy your season tickets with cash. And then if you want to give money to the organization, you're going to have to do that as well. So that'll have an impact on people, believe it or not. There's a lot of people that do that, which is probably why they changed it. So if that's not enough changes for you, I've got some more coming at you. So some other little things that are going to be changing here with the tax code. Something that's been contentious has been the tax penalty for health insurance under the Affordable Care Act. If you did not have an ACA compliant policy, you were subject to a tax penalty. And it depended on how much you made, what your income was, what your filing status was. But starting in 2019, so this year, they're going to eliminate the Affordable Care Act tax penalty. So depending on what kind of political persuasion you have, some people might say that's going to really hurt the whole Affordable Care Act as far as viability. But if you are paying this tax, you're probably pretty happy because now it's gone. So you can avoid it completely. All right. And why is that going to have an impact on the viability? Well, now people don't have to have insurance. If you don't have insurance, you're not going to face that ACA penalty. Another little thing it's probably not a huge issue, but it could affect a few of you listening since you're focused on finances, changes to the kiddie tax. So the kiddie tax kicks in if you're trying to put a lot of your investments into your children's names. Usually now the kiddie tax kicks in once you have more than $2,100 of unearned income for the children. Unearned income is going to be dividends, interest, capital gains. It's something where they're not making money with the sweat of their brow. Now, once they get past $2,100, they're now taxing the kiddie tax at the estate and trust levels. So that means that any amount of money that the children earn, unearned income above $2,100, is going to be taxed at higher rates for most people. Estates and trust tax rates go up very fast. They go up once you get past $1,400, you're paying the top tax rate of 37%. So you do have to be careful here and not put too much money in your kids' names. You might want to look at putting this money into a 529 plan. So a 529 plan got a little bit better with the new tax code. The reason is you can now use a 529 for private high school and middle school. In fact, any kind of private school up to $10,000 per year. So you should be able to shelter some of this money for college as well as private school now if you want. So rather than putting money in your children's names, which could trigger the kiddie tax, you might want to look at just putting that money into a 529 plan. Another thing that got changed is the annual gift tax exclusion. That's now going to go up to $15,000 per year. What is the annual gift tax exclusion? Well, essentially over your lifetime, and then upon your passing, you have a certain amount of money that you can give to your heirs and beneficiaries without having to pay estate taxes. Now, if you give a gift to somebody more than $15,000, you technically have to file a gift tax return and declare to the government that you're using up some of your lifetime and post-lifetime gift tax exclusion. Now, if you only go up to that $15,000 limit, you don't have to file a gift tax return, and it doesn't count against your lifetime annual exclusion amount. You just do it, and it doesn't reduce the amount that you're able to give to your beneficiaries and heirs. I know this is probably a little bit confusing for people. I'll do a video on it at some point, but essentially, what you want to do is if you're looking to give money to kids or grandkids, you want to keep it to $15,000 or less. And speaking of the tax exclusion for your gifts and your estate upon passing, that's going to double for everybody as well. So the amount that you can pass to heirs, either during life as a gift or after death in your estate, is going up to $10 million. That means a married couple can essentially shelter up to $20 million for their kids or grandkids or whomever they like to give money to. Now that's gone up from roughly about 5.2 million to 10 million. So you have $10 million that you can give over your lifetime or upon your passing that won't get taxed at the estate tax rate. So that's a good thing. Another little thing that they changed, this is pretty nuanced, but the new tax law got rid of the ability to recharacterize a Roth IRA conversion. You used to be able to convert your Roth from a traditional IRA to a Roth, and then if the assets lost value, like back in a 2008 event, you could reverse the conversion back to the traditional. So if you make a recharacterization now, if you convert to a Roth, it's a one-time decision that can't be changed regardless of what happens to the asset value after the conversion. It's kind of a small thing, but you don't see that often. But you did see it quite a bit after the 2008-2009 stock market crash, because what happened is a lot of people who had converted to a Roth lost a lot of money, so they recharacterized it back to a traditional IRA, and that helped them on taxes. Okay, so are you still with me? Are you still awake? I know taxes isn't a fun thing to talk about. Hopefully, whatever caffeine product you're taking is kicking in. I know we've gone through a bit here, but I just want to let you know some strategies you could take to try to help improve your tax situation. So the first thing that I'm starting to recommend for a lot of people is looking at Roth IRAs or Roth 401ks in your retirement plan through work. So one of the great things that the new Trump tax bill did was it lowered tax rates for everyone. We talked about this in the last podcast. The 10% has remained the same, but the 15% tax bracket dropped to 12. The 25% dropped to 22. The 28 is now 24, and so on and so forth. So we basically cap out now at 37%, whereas before we were at 39.6. Also, the income ranges in the new tax code has each bracket has a bigger amount of taxable income that you can take. What do I mean by that? Well, so the 15% bracket, which dropped to 12, also includes about another $30,000 that will be taxed at 12%. So you're not only getting a lower tax rate, you're getting more of your income taxed at these lower tax rates. So what's going to happen is in 2025, the tax code will revert back to what it was in 2017. There is something called a sunset provision. So the tax code will sunset back to 2017 unless Congress makes the tax changes permanent. So they have to pass a bill that says they want to keep the current tax law the way it is. Otherwise, we're going to go back to the way it was before 2018. Now, as I look at today's political environment, and I see all these morons on both sides of the aisle, I'm not picking on one or the other, but both sides of the aisle, they're morons. They can't get anything passed. I just don't see them coming around to make these changes permanent. I just don't see it. So what does that mean? Well, it means the 12% will become 15% again. The 22 will become 25. The 24 will become 28, and so on. So I'm anticipating that we're at the lowest tax rates that we may ever see in our lifetimes. So you might want to take advantage of any kind of Roth instrument, whether it's an IRA or a Roth 401k or 403b. You want to get that tax-free growth. Now, with the Roth, when you put money in there, you don't get a tax break when the money goes in. But the money grows tax-free. So you'll never pay tax on any of the gains. So if we're in the lowest tax bracket environment that we'll ever see, then it might make sense to actually put more of your money into a Roth IRA or 401k and pay the tax today, knowing that when you eventually take this money out down the road, you're going to be in a higher bracket. So I think this is an absolute no-brainer for younger people who maybe aren't in their prime earning years. You're in the 24% tax bracket or below. So if you're in the 22 or 12% bracket, you need to be doing a Roth, absolutely, without a doubt. But even if you're in a 24% bracket, you might want to do this. Even if you're not young, if you're an old geezer like me, you know, you Gen X, maybe even the baby boomers, you might still want to put it into the Roth now and pay at a lower rate, knowing that when you pull the money out, you're going to not pay any tax on it. And if you did a traditional IRA or a traditional 401k, you would be paying tax at what's going to be a higher rate. So even if you're a baby boomer a couple years away from retirement, it could make sense to do this because let's say you put $15,000 into your Roth 401k. Okay, maybe you pay 22, 24% on it. Even if a couple years, once you're retired, you pull this money out, and the $15,000 is now going to be taxed at 25 or 28%. So it makes a lot of sense to think about it even for those folks. Now, if you're getting into the the higher tax brackets up to 37%, you still might be better off doing the traditional and getting a tax break now, hoping that when you do retire, you won't need as much income and you'll be in a lower tax bracket. But if you're in a 24% or below tax bracket, you really need to do an analysis to see if it makes sense to do the Roth. I think it is. The other thing about the Roth is it might make a lot of sense to do a conversion. You might want to start moving money from a traditional IRA or traditional 401k, 403b, and putting it into a Roth. Again, let's take advantage of these low rates. They'll be the lowest we'll ever see in our lifetime, more than likely. So let's say you're in the 24% tax bracket and you've got about $30,000, $40,000 of more taxable income you could have before you reach the next tax bracket, next higher tax bracket. So maybe you convert $30,000 at 24%. And if you can do that for the next 4 or 5 years until the tax code sunsets, you've been able to pull, $100,000 to $200,000 out, turn it into tax-free growth, and you're doing it at lower tax rates. So I think it makes a lot of sense to contribute to the Roth in whatever form you can be, IRA or 401k. But it also makes a lot of sense to look to do conversions, especially if you're a retiree who doesn't have a lot of income right now. You haven't gotten to the point where you have to take your required minimum distribution, which starts at around 70.5. You might want to look at doing Roth conversions until we get past that 2025 deadline and rates rise back up. Okay. Another way to do some strategies, the second way, is to look at your itemized deductions. As I mentioned, it's much more difficult to itemize today than it used to be, mainly because your state income taxes paid has been capped at $10,000. Well, we had a lot of people that were awfully close to itemizing. So a married filing joint couple would have a standard deduction of $24,000. So we had a lot of people that might be at $22,000, $23,000. So what they might want to do is bunch their itemized deductions into a year. So what do I mean by that? Well, let's say every year you give $5,000 to charity. You do it every single year. And you're still not at a point where you're able to itemize, but you're close. So maybe this year in 2019, you don't give anything to charity. Now, I'm not suggesting you aren't more charitable or you're a bad person by doing this, but what you're going to end up doing in 2020 is you'll give $10,000. So instead of doing $5,000 in 2019, $5,000 in 2020, you're just going to give $10,000 to the charity and bunch it into 1 year as opposed to 2 years. So now, if you were at that $22,000, $23,000, even $19,000 of itemized deductions, now you're at the point where you're going to be able to itemize. So you just kind of stagger it. So 1 year you're going to take the basic standard deduction, and then the next year you're going to double up on your charity and you're going to get the itemized deductions. Over time, you're going to end up making out and getting more taxes back from Uncle Sam. Now, speaking of bunching, you can also do that with mortgage payments. So maybe 1 year you prepay some mortgage interest. You do that right at the end of the year just to make sure that you're going to have the ability to bunch more of your itemized deductions and get that itemized deductions for the year. This can also be done with medical. So if you're a person, again, remember, it's hard to deduct medical, but if you're somebody who's kind of close to doing it or you have reached that before, what you want to try to do is just bunch a lot of your medical expenses in 1 year. So if you know you're going to get a knee surgery, some dental work, maybe LASIK or glasses, you try to bunch that into 1 year to maximize the amount of medical. And then that will also maximize your itemized deductions. So if you alternate every year with bunching, you can do much better than the standard deduction. And then you can really increase the amount you'll save on taxes. So those are just some general rules. Try to give you a little bit of an overview. I know this has been pretty long. I know it's boring because it's taxes. What we're going to try to do is give you more information on this as time progresses. But hopefully you have a better understanding of the tax code and maybe get a good idea of what you might need to do to improve your tax situation. And again, we're always open to taking questions. If you have one, just leave a comment or reach out to us with an email. We'd be happy to answer your question and also do that. Take your question and create a podcast or do a follow-up video. So again, hopefully you got something out of this. Hopefully you're going to save a little bit of money on your taxes because of it. And I hope that it was useful to sit there and listen to me drone on for half an hour or so. But, you know, the big takeaway that I always talk about is right now matters, especially with taxes. Taxes, you have to do it in the calendar year. It's not like savings or, you know, cutting expenses where it doesn't matter when you really step in and do it. Taxes are an annual thing. You don't want to wait to make changes to your tax situation because you're going to lose some deductions if you delay. You have to act right now. Right now matters. So hopefully, again, you're one step closer to saving yourself from Wall Street. Well, that's it for this episode of the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. I appreciate you stopping in. As always, you can find our podcast along with other articles and videos at savingyourselffromwallstreet.com. And now, the lawyers say hi.
Saving Yourself from Wall Street is hosted by Kurt Kinder. Kurt Kinder is the owner of Picket Fence Financial, a fee-only financial planning firm. Picket Fence Financial is regulated by the states of Maryland and Florida in accordance and in compliance with securities laws and regulations. Picket Fence Financial does not render or offer to render personalized financial or tax advice through the Saving Yourself from Wall Street podcast. The information provided is for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial, tax, investment, or legal advice.